through the second half of this year, there's also been, you know, increasing talk around the issue of transparency, whether that was freedom of information laws or secrecy around the Nauru refugee deal. Tom, last week you were also reporting about a parliamentary committee that was being set up to look into the AUKUS pact that would exclude independents and the Greens. Transparency and integrity were such key parts of Labor's victory against the Morrison government. Is it walking the talk when it comes to transparency and integrity?
I think there are real signs that it is not walking the talk. I think these are big areas of concern. The FOI laws, the changes that were introduced to the parliament by Michelle Rowland, the Attorney General, caught everyone by surprise. The government makes the case that departments and agencies are being swamped with these applications and changes are necessary. The one bit of good news on that bill is it looks pretty friendless in the parliament. The Coalition and the Greens are certainly opposed to it so far, so I don't think that's going anywhere. But more broadly, the government doesn't want to talk about transparency, and it is being secretive in many areas. And I think the kind of bottom line here is that if the members of the former Morrison government have grounds to criticise you on transparency, you must be doing something wrong. And I think that this is a theme emerging of this government. It's something that they should address. We've seen reviews and other documents kept secret, unnecessarily in my view. Mm-hmm. We've seen approach to the parliament that's kind of push through these kinds of questions and try and tough it out. And I think it's regrettable. I think Labor should try and live up more to their promises back at the 2022 election.
We've talked about the contrast between the way that Anthony Albanese's year has played out versus Susan Lee in the coalition. It's been a really messy 7 months. She has survived the so-called killing season, but she's not out of the woods.
No, she's a long way from out of the woods. She'll obviously make it through the summer break now, but I think her critics internally will be preparing themselves for some kind of move next year, unless there's a dramatic turnaround in the polling for Susan Lee and she manages to bridge the kind of chasms that exist within the coalition party room. I think that's going to be very difficult. Policy and politics are both difficult in the coalition, and Lee's numbers seem pretty tenuous. I think the right wing of the coalition, the Conservatives, seem to have the march on Susan Lee. And I think if someone like Angus Taylor or Andrew Hastie decided that they wanted to take the leadership, they'd be able to do so relatively quickly. If she had a bad stumble early in the year, I think it could be disastrous.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we should underestimate Susan Lee. I think there are similarities between her and Anthony Albanese. So people that have just been constantly underestimated throughout their whole career. And there has been cases in the 6 months that she's been leader where she's sown really tough mettle. I mean, she dealt with the split and then the reunification of the Liberals and Nationals while grieving the death of her mother. There's been cases where she's stared down conservative parts of her party. But I do think when I cast my mind to next year, I just wonder if we're going to reach a point where the Liberal Party room says Susan Lee's actually not the best spokesperson for our agenda. If you think about what are the critical parts of their agenda at the moment, it's they've dumped net zero. They're working on an immigration policy at the moment. I suspect that is going to involve cutting immigration. There'll be other components, but these are kind of the big flagship policies. Is Susan Lee the best person to be prosecuting that agenda? Does she genuinely believe in those things? There are clearly going to be other people in the party room. Andrew Hastie, I mean, this is what he essentially left the front bench for, to prosecute for this exact agenda. So it strikes me that we might reach a point next year where the party room says, if this is the path we're going down, we want someone to be able to authentically prosecute this case. Is Susan Lee the best person to do it? And I suspect at some point they'll decide no.
Mm. I want to circle back to some points that you made earlier. We've talked a fair bit on this podcast about the rise of the far right, polling suggesting that Pauline Hanson's One Nation is growing in popularity. There's an expectation that Barnaby Joyce will join her party any day now. And we often analyse what that means for the coalition, but what does it mean for Labor and the government? In the UK, Labor is now offering what some have described as a watered-down version of Nigel Farage's policies. Is Labor ready to do what's necessary to counter the surge in the populist right?
It's a great question. It might be one of the defining questions of this period in politics, I think. The fragmentation that is going on electorally is weakening responses to this kind of thing. If Pauline Hanson's numbers, in some opinion polls, approaching 20%, that's concerning. You're right, nor for the coalition, they'll be hemorrhaging some votes. But Labor might as well, and on hot-button issues like immigration, things around multiculturalism and social cohesion, there'll be a challenge for the government in responding to it and trying to appropriately distance themselves from One Nation when necessary, and at other times perhaps make political decisions to try and keep some voters in the tent. I could imagine a scenario where their attempts to calm the politics around immigration into Australia get away from them a little bit, and if Hanson's strategy is successful and they can call the shots for the coalition, that could become difficult for Labor pretty quickly, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think on the face of it, the risk is all on the coalition side. That's clearly the opinion polls are suggesting the majority of the voters that are going to One Nation are coming from the coalition. I also think we have to be really wary about comparing Australia to the UK or even the US just because of how different migration systems are. But I think Labor is conscious of this. And I think one really telling example was the language that Anthony Albanese used after, I think it was the first March for Australia rally, and he used a phrase that there were good people among the crowds there. He made clear that there was Nazis there. There was a lot of people who were clearly not good, but you can tell, and it was a comment that didn't go down well with members of his caucus, but you can tell he's kind of wanting to be very conscious not to alienate people who he thinks has legitimate concerns about the rate of immigration and the impact that it might be having on infrastructure and jobs and those sorts of things.
Dan, surely there's a risk that comes with seeking to appease some of those people.
Absolutely. I think in the days after that Albanese made those comments, a member of his caucus, and this is very rare for those who follow the Labor caucus, somebody stood up and actually said, well, hang on, where's the line here? There were literally neo-Nazis here. We have to draw the line. So there is an absolute risk for Anthony Albanese in trying to run this centrist path that he attempts to do on everything, is that this is not the issue that you want to try and bring everyone necessarily along with you. You need to stand on principles, and there are risks in his caucus, and there's a risk in large swathes of the community that I think whilst there might be angst about elements of, you know, about infrastructure and housing and those sorts of things, I'm very certain of this, that Australians by and large, don't blame migrants on this. So I think it is a risk for Anthony Albanese in the way that he manages the rhetoric.
Mm. Okay, so we've talked about the wedding, nature laws, gambling, the rise of the far right. The parliament may be wrapping up, but that doesn't mean that the political machinations end. What or who will you be keeping an eye on in the summer and in 2026?
I'll be watching the leaders to see how quickly they come back to the political front lines after the summer break. I think Anthony Albanese will be quick out of the blocks. He seems to like doing a bit of work in January and getting a run, and I wouldn't be surprised if he speaks at the press club before Australia Day. In terms of issues, I'll be watching work on childcare and advance towards a universal system, and any debate, any discussion, any chatter within Labor about possible changes to generous concessions for property investors and if there's an appetite along those lines.
I'm going to be watching Jim Chalmers. You mentioned how Anthony Albanese doesn't like it when people say that they're not pursuing reform. Mm. I suspect that Jim shares that view. But Chalmers is, we might recall, it seems like a lifetime ago, he gave a speech to the National Press Club after the election and more or less said the door is open to a national conversation about tax reform. He had a productivity roundtable scheduled for a few months later. There was really huge expectations about what was possible and what the government might be willing to consider. Really, those expectations died down very quickly. And now, you know, a lot of those things, the bigger picture things, haven't been kind of actively considered. But I'm really interested to see how Chalmers approaches 2026. Is he going to go on the front foot? Is he going to try and really be forthright in making the case? He's been the treasurer for, would be heading into his fourth year now. He's in the category of long-serving treasurer, and we know that he wants to put down a marker and do things that change the country. So I'll be watching Jim Chalmers and watching him very closely.
Okay. Tom, Dan, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Noel. That was fun.
A pleasure.
That was political editor Tom McElroy and chief political correspondent Dan Jervis-Vardy. You can find more of their work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to their latest pieces on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Krishna Luthria. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget you can subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also leave us a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.